Is up, fellow basement dwellers. Welcome in once again to another edition of Bandwagon Nerds. I am your host, Patrick O'Dowd, coming to you live to tape from the Chair Shot Radio Network. Here, as always, with our two guests, our two best hosts, the actual hosts, the people who actually show up, one who always shows up, Mr. Dave Ungar, and, well, Rick, I guess. not PC Tunney. Who's quickly becoming the second host. Rick, I got to call you out, man. I got to call you out because two shows ago, when we were giving you a hard time, words were spoken along the lines of, well, now that the Saints are done, I'm going to get to September. The next fucking show.
Guys, I can't go to the show. I can't do the podcast because I'm going to go to a parade and celebrate with the LSU Tigers.
So I don't know if I can believe you when you say you're here for the long haul until September. I feel like something's going to come up again. You're going to become a New Orleans Pelicans fan or something and start watching the NBA.
They're not making the playoffs, so.
Yeah, you ain't got to worry about it. So I can tell you right now, I'm going to have plenty of time on my hands, Patrick. I don't think I'm missing a show anytime soon, but I did say that. And look, the parade was last minute. I had to go down. I had to go see it. I missed the Oklahoma game because I had the flu. So this was my last opportunity to see these guys with the trophy. And I wasn't missing it. But hey, I'm back.
Are you getting rid of that Saints thing behind you and getting a Bengals thing next year? I'm just wondering.
If Joe Burrow goes to the Bengals, I'm not going to get rid of this one. I'm just going to put a Bengals one next to it.
Fair enough.
So, I mean, I guess, you know, divide your loyalties. That's cool.
I need, before I do anything, I just need to slap an LSU national championship flag right on top of this bad boy.
I mean, yeah, you certainly shouldn't have a Saints logo up there after the egg they laid in the playoffs.
I agree.
At least one of the teams came through.
Right. It could have been gross.
I just think about it. If the Saints would have not lost to either Atlanta or San Francisco, the Saints would have played Sunday in the Superdome. LSU would have played Monday. Just imagine the atmosphere in that city.
I mean,
that weekend.
Yeah, I get you. I can appreciate that, I suppose. But they didn't, and so we don't have to worry about that, and nobody cares. What we do care about today.
Tell me how you really feel, Patrick.
I mean, I cheer for the Bears, so I hate everything in the world of professional football because our ownership and our general manager are a joke. Wait, I don't
you do realize there's a Redskin fan in this trifecta here, so you really can't talk about.
We were trying not to bring that up.
I mean, I don't like to talk about the team in Washington D.C. They can't seem to change the racist name. Like, just change the racist name, dude. God, it's not hard. You know I'm right. Anyway, but we're not here to talk about football. We're here because we like to talk about nerdy stuff. And this week we got a fairly strong show. I'm really excited. We're going to continue the 80s project later on in the episode. This week, Rick, Dave, and I, we put together our top 10 action adventure movies of the 80s. Rick's got double thumbs up, which means that he looked at an IMDb list, and outside of his number one, he was able to put down a list.
Every movie on my list numerous occasions.
I just want to know how many Batman titles are we going to have to deal with, Rick? Just one. All right.
Well, there was only one Batman title in the 80s. It came out in 89.
That's true.
Spoiler alert, that's Rick's number one. So we don't even there's no question there. We all know the answer to that. We're also going to cover The Witcher Episode 3 and a little bit of trouble for the Obi-Wan Kenobi Disney Plus show. Some reports come out, mildly concerning. We're going to talk about that a little bit too. But before we do that, I am drinking today.
Yes.
For full disclosure, I have the scotch. I'm showing it to the camera right now.
Looks good.
And I'm drinking today because today is we record on a Sunday, folks. It's 2 p.m. here on the 26th of January. Today is my favorite day in all of professional wrestling every year. And people will be like, what, WrestleMania? No. The Royal Rumble is my favorite wrestling show of the year. I've always wanted to go. Someday I will go. I love that match. Shut that dog up.
I'm trying, man. Jesus.
Yeah. Can't you
damn it, Dave.
Put that cigarette out. Put it out.
Shut that bitch up.
Hey now. But we're not going to talk too much about wrestling But because it is Royal Rumble Day and I am celebrating drinking my scotch, we'll be enjoying it throughout as we start the road to WrestleMania. I just wanted to share two of my favorite Royal Rumbles and then hear from you guys quickly your favorite Royal Rumble matches, just the matches, not the shows. So my favorite Royal Rumble show match of all time is the 92 Rumble where Ric Flair wins the world title. Anybody who knows me knows this. It was actually the first Royal Rumble I ever saw. Bobby Heenan hooked me with his commentary and his "I can't be biased" throughout the whole thing, cheering on Rick, losing his mind, celebrating right like crazy. And then you get that famous Ric Flair promo with a tear in his eyes. Just such a great, great show, great story, and great match. My number two, though, is the 2007 Royal Rumble. And it's not the best Royal Rumble match, but the last 10 minutes of that Royal Rumble match are the best last 10 minutes of any Royal Rumble match in history, in my opinion, when you have Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker facing each other off alone in the ring and basically having a 10-minute match to wrap that Rumble up. Two veterans, two all-timers, tearing the house down. And really what I argue is the beginning of the end of Shawn Michaels' career story arc. As he cannot overcome The Undertaker and leads into his retirement. So those are mine. Gentlemen, what about you? What are your two? What are a couple of your favorite Rumbles?
92 is my favorite as well, Patrick. I mean, the Ric Flair. I mean, you just look at like, what was the final four of that? Wasn't it like Flair, Hogan, Savage, and Psycho Sid? Mean, that's with the exception of Sid, that's a pretty hefty Hall of Fame class.
Hey, Sid was over as hell. Like, for as awful of a person he is, he was always over. Always over.
Sorry. I still love when, I mean, Gator and I used to talk about that time where he just takes that guy on that gurney and just rolls him right into the ring post. It's like, the humanity of that sort of thing. But, right. You know, 92, everybody kind of defers to that one. I know Rick and I did a couple of watch-alongs on some Rumbles that were really good. You know, the one that sticks out in my mind that doesn't get talked about, and it's relatively new, is the 2016 Royal Rumble. You had AJ Styles make that iconic debut. You know, Roman was the champion, had to run the table to retain the title, and then he's out of the match for half the match, and he comes back, and he's dominating, and then Triple H shows up, and everybody just loses their damn mind. I love that Royal Rumble. Triple H winning that, which set off the road to WrestleMania 32, which I'm, you know, have a soft spot for because we were there. But, you know, other than that, I mean, a lot of the ones that you guys already talked about, I mean, a lot of them kind of like blur together because there's been so many of them. But, and of course, 90, when Hogan and Warrior squared off against each other the first time leading into WrestleMania 6 was a huge moment. 93, the one that Rick and I watched along.
Okay, that's four now. That's four now, Dave.
I was trolling Rick there because that was the one where Savage gets pressed over the rope by Yokozuna, which was when he was
attempting a pinfall.
Yeah,
right. Rick, you got one.
Of course, the 92 Rumble. I mean, if your 92 is not in the top three, then you either haven't watched it or you don't know anything about shit. But and then of course 2001, just because I was there, same year Austin won, and I put that in the same category because I was also at WrestleMania 17 where Austin beat The Rock. So that year was really good for me in wrestling. So just being there live, man. And Patrick, like, I've been to WrestleMania, I've been to Royal Rumble. The Royal Rumble is just with the right atmosphere and the right group of guys and the right card. I don't think a WrestleMania can touch a Royal Rumble. That's just my opinion.
Sure. Yeah, I think it depends on what happens there. Like, I was at WrestleMania 26 with Greg, you know, and that was huge just because you got to see Shawn Michaels say goodbye. So it really does. Most shows are like that. It's about the moment. But enough wrestling. That's our wrestling talk for today, everybody. We're going to jump right in. We're going to start talking about The Witcher Episode 3, and it looks like I'm going to start talking about The Witcher Episode 3. Pulling the curtain back. Dave's walking away. What's going on here? I'm getting nervous. Mayday, mayday.
I'm just trying to shut these dogs up, man.
I know, really. Should have put, get a pen or corral or something. Mute them. Anyway, Witcher Episode 3, watched it. I watched it today. I've found that I'm most effective talking about these shows if I watch it right in front of the podcast. And boy, howdy. Tony had told us, Dave, if you recall last week, that stuff starts to pick up after episode 1 and 2. And it's certainly picked up after episode one and two. We are done building a world. We are now telling our story, and we got two dandies to follow along with today, as we got to follow Geralt on what appears to be a monster of the week thing, but a beautiful connection at, later on in the episode. And we also see the evolution of Yennefer into what we were promised, as she undergoes a massive transformation by the end of that episode. And you can tell she is going to be a being of serious power and a serious contender and a real problem for anybody who gets in her way.
Yeah, this was the best episode so far. I thought it had the most intrigue, the most action going on. You had, you know, Geralt going up against the what was the demon? Some I forget what it was called.
It
starts with an S. Striga.
Right.
Striga. Striga is what they were called. I think. I'm pretty sure that's what it was called. I mean, that was great how the first Witcher just got taken out by this thing. And of course, you know, they kind of set it up for the townspeople to think that he just took off with their money. But it was a much deeper plot involving, as far as I could tell, incest. Maybe not. Yep. Maybe it was.
No, yes, definitely. So here's what it was. So the creature was actually the cursed daughter of the king's sister. The relationship between the king and his sister was incestuous. The king was the father of his, what would you would argue is his niece. There was a jealous, I don't know what his role was, but he was like he was clearly one of the, you know, the top people in the court. And there was some sort of an affair that was happening there, or at least a perceived affair between the sister and this young man, or this man. And he, in a jealous rage over the fact that his daughter, or over that the fact that this daughter was conceived, and that he believed that the king took advantage of his sister and raped her, tried to curse the king, and it went wrong, and he cursed the sister, which then resulted in a corrupted child being born when the sister was killed. Or died.
Right.
So a lot of intrigue going on there. The thing that I love out of this story is that we are getting a lot of seeds being planted about Geralt being different from other Witchers, in that they talk about Witchers not having any level of emotion. And it's clear that that is not true for Geralt. And how is that going to come into play? He is running from something that gets hinted at, but we're not sure what. And it seems to be somebody that he loved.
And his interaction with Renfri in the first episode rings true even here. I mean, when he's on death's doorstep, right? As far as Yennefer, that was tremendous. Just the transformation she went through, which I kind of knew was coming. You know, I'd heard things about that. But you know, the fact that she basically has to give up her ability to bear children to do this transformation with this artist who dabbles in, you know, I mean, he paints on her to make her whole again, or just to get rid of the hunchback and to fix her face. And it's like no painting you've ever seen before, because it's infused with probably chaos magic and all sorts of other stuff. And,
right.
And she comes out and just like, oh my goodness, you know, like, damn, that was just stunning to see. I mean, you indicated you'd seen, you'd looked her up on IMDb or something like that and seen what she really looks like.
And I was oh my.
So you knew what was coming. I hadn't gone that far, but I was like, wow. And then you've got, you know, this, I don't know if it's the king or somebody at the ball who's smitten with her, you know, kind of a modern day Cinderella. Right. I mean, I've heard things after this episode, nothing in excruciating detail, but just that her choice is going to be a big issue for her moving forward. The choice.
Oh,
about,
sure.
So I thought, great episode, you know, Yennefer becoming more powerful, Geralt's character being broadened, getting, you know, deeper into this whole thing. I think
humanized.
I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in 4, because I've heard that it kind of goes off in a little bit of a different direction at this point.
Right.
But I mean, you couldn't have gotten a much better episode than you got there.
And the last thing that I want to point out is that there is a connection between Geralt's story and Yennefer's story. That tells you again the sense of time, because if I unless I read this wrong, it appears to me that we're still in the past when we're following Yennefer.
Possibly, it very well might be the case, but it's hard to tell.
So to walk that back, during that dance, there is an interaction with a young boy and a young girl who are in the portrait of the abandoned castle that Geralt is walking through. At least that's what it appears to me. And so that tells me that we are still in the past when following what's going on with Yennefer. And if you want to look at Geralt's timeline as the present, that seems to be where we are. Yennefer is still how we're getting to her involvement in Geralt's timeline.
Yeah.
And so it was just a nice subtle way of showing you where things are, but it's not so obvious that I can see why people would, you know, you hear about people who talked about being confused with the timeline. Those are the sorts of things you have to look for to catch on to the timeline and see where we are.
Yeah. That may very well be true.
So I'm sure if there's anybody out there following us on Bandwagon Nerds on the Twitter or me personally, let me know if I'm wrong or if I'm correct. Cause I want
Rick to explain it to us. Rick, what's really going on with this show? Do you have that all figured out or what?
He didn't even know.
What I think is what happened is we're going to find out next episode.
All right. I thought for sure Rick was going to say, never mind. I'm not going to go there.
Right. Okay. So yeah, I agree with you, Dave, though. I think it was a terrific episode. Looking forward to episode 4. This has been a great series so far in building tension and action and excitement for the next episode. And so can't wait to do it. The other thing that kind of happened this week, and Dave, you and I talked about it off show in the chat room, a couple of interesting, I'm going to use interesting, I don't want to say troubling, though I will say I'm mildly troubled, reports came out regarding the upcoming Obi-Wan Kenobi Star Wars show that's supposed to be showing up on Disney Plus. Now, the one I saw was a Hollywood Reporter story that talked about how only 2 episodes of the show had been written and that Disney was sending them off to be rewritten already with a different scriptwriter. And that is being viewed amongst the nerdosphere as possibly a troubling sign. Now, later, there was a brief interview. I can't remember where it happened, maybe at the SAG Awards or something, where Ewan McGregor was asked about this. And he said that, you know, the scripts are great. They're just doing a little bit of work. There's still going to be plenty of time for me to come back. Like, he didn't seem particularly bothered by it. He didn't seem particularly concerned and worried. So this could just be a big kerfuffle over nothing. But I ask you two, red flag, not red flag.
I don't know. What does Rick think about? Never mind. You want me to go first, Rick? I'm sure you want.
Which one is Obi-Wan Kenobi? Is that the robot guy?
Okay. On that note, I think I'll comment next. I think there's some reason to be concerned, not so much for the series, but just kind of like with, when you look at that combined with the stuff we heard about Doctor Strange 2, the Multiverse of Madness and rewrites and rethinking the script and rethinking the direction. It kind of gets to me like thinking, well, maybe Disney's really overthinking this stuff too much and putting too much thought into this thing. And instead of just letting it flow like they always, like the Marvel Studios did, this could be a Disney oversight issue. Maybe they're trying to get too involved. I don't see why. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. But, you know, I heard about the Obi-Wan was that there was concerns it was too much like The Mandalorian and they wanted to get away from that, where it was Obi-Wan helping young Luke. I don't see how, I heard young Leia, but I don't see how that's possible because Obi-Wan's on Tatooine for the whole time that Luke's a youngster growing up. You know, I do understand that if he's helping Luke out as a youngster, then you start running into potential Phantom Menace problems where you got to have a strong child actor. You can't do Jake Lloyd again. Maybe they're just like, hey, look, we don't want to do anything involving Luke. I tend to agree with that decision. I just think there's too many problems with child actors. I mean, some are great. Let's not kid ourselves. A lot of them are just average. And I don't think a series like this needs an average child actor. You need a strong character who's going to be Luke. So if that's what they're doing, then fine. Just focus on Obi-Wan and what he's doing with the, you know, the sand people and the crate dragons and all that shit going on out in the middle of the Tatooine for 20 years. That's fine. If they're really concerned it's too much like Mandalorian, then yeah, redo it. I don't see it as a huge, massive red flag, but it is concerning that you know, maybe Disney's micromanaging this stuff a bit too much.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say not a big red flag. I don't see it as a particularly big red flag. I do see it as mildly concerning. I think that it's easy to forget Disney has had control of Marvel for quite some time. And you know, I think that it's every time we have this conversation, we've had it multiple times on the show now. Marvel has more goodwill because of the way that they've handled a lot of changes and shifts that have taken place within their cinematic universe. For example, Kevin Feige gets a lot of credit for that. Star Wars and Disney's role in Star Wars has been hit or miss, in my opinion, at best. And that is what gives me pause when regards to this, because you look at the gross overreaction they had to Solo, that they looked at Solo as this dismal failure because fans weren't bought in. And rather than recognizing that they were oversaturating the Star Wars market with Star Wars, is really what I think happened to Solo, is that people were just tired of Star Wars. Because unlike Marvel movies in the MCU just feel distinctive in sort of tone and tenor. And it seems like with the Star Wars franchise, and maybe this gets to what you're talking about, Dave, with being too similar to The Mandalorian, a lot of similar stuff that seems to come out with the names changing somewhat. And I just wonder what, if it's a runner thing, is it that Kevin Feige is better than what's her name over at Star Wars? Like, I don't know. Is it that Disney's overthinking it because the fan base is so passionate? It seems like the Marvel fan base has been, even though there's overlap, seems to be much more forgiving when something isn't great. And that's fascinating to me, but for whatever reason, Star Wars just doesn't have the goodwill that it seems like Marvel does when it comes to something happening and our reaction to it happening. And I wonder if Disney isn't reacting to the reaction or the concern.
They might be. I mean, yeah, you raised some good points that, that Star Wars is not, it's not looked upon in the fandom with the same reverence that the Marvel universe is right now.
It's just not protected.
I agree with you. There's a lot more, there's a lot more, people are more tolerant of stuff with Marvel, but Marvel right. generally puts out really good stuff. You don't see a lot of polarizing reactions to the Marvel stuff like you saw with Rise of Skywalker, like you saw with
right.
Last Jedi, things like that. And yeah, you don't
best of the new trilogy.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, but that's the issue though. The way that you feel about Last Jedi and the way I feel and the way you feel about Rise of Skywalker and I feel is endemic to what's a problem with Star Wars right now. Is there is no consensus. You've got a hard dividing line, it between the fans, and that's hard to deal with. It's not like Marvel, where generally, unless you know, like my buddy Ken, who just worships Thanos, but that's his problem, but other than that, most people love everything that Marvel does, and right. you don't have a lot of complaints about what they're doing, and Star Wars is not the same way. So yeah, maybe they're trying to, hey, we need to make this and do this so that more people are accepting of this. And, that's just hard, and they're struggling with that.
Yeah. So I think it'll be interesting to see where it goes moving forward. And the show's still going to happen, in my opinion. Like, I don't think that we should be worried about, oh my God, we're going into cancel land a la Hawkeye.
Would you guys rather a lengthy delay and let them get this right, as opposed to trying to rush it out and have it mediocre?
I guess it depends on what mediocre is. And here's the thing is, you can say something like lengthy delay. That can still create backlash either way. And I'll point to the Justice League movie, where there is this group of people who, for fuck's sake,
we're trying to gain downloads, Patrick.
Stop the Snyder Cut crap. Like, just stop it. Like, we're going to get like this mythical cut of Justice League that exists out there, and maybe it does, and if it does and it comes out, and Zack Snyder, by the way, people, not a great director anyway, but so it goes either way, because you got that, well, they changed everything, we have this delay and it was awful, or they should have just gone with the original script, they should have never let Joss Whedon touch what Zack Snyder wanted to do, shouldn't have made any changes at all. And then it goes the other way around too. Oh, they rushed us out. They should have moved faster. So there's no winning, Rick. It's like wrestling fans. Like, there's no winning, especially in the world of social media.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think they're doing anything wrong.
No.
I don't know if a lengthy delay is going to get it, air quoting, right. That sort of thing. They just need, if they think they're going in a direction that's going to be problematic and too much of a copycat. Hey, Mandalorian works. Let's copy that. Then yeah, by all means, redo this thing and get it to the point where you think, hey, I'm comfortable with this. Let's release this. you know, the biggest thing Obi-Wan has going for it is Ewan McGregor. It's going to be awfully hard to fuck this up with him anchoring that thing. So I feel good about their chances.
Right. And I think here's the other reality. No matter how long it takes for this show to go out, no matter when it comes out or how they release it, people are going to freaking watch it. Like they are. They're going to like that. That fan base is a set fan base, just like a comic book fan base. They are going to watch it. Some people will tune out if it's terrible, but a lot of people will see it through.
Chances are we'll be reviewing it no matter how it is.
Probably. We'll go from there. But yeah, so more to come on that as news unravels. I don't think that there will be much more news about it in the coming weeks. It seems like it'll just kind of quietly fade off until they start filming. I think that'll be the next time we see news is like, oh, we're filming episodes of The Mandalorian. So, right. Yeah, so with that, we are going to take a little break, pay the bills.
Hey, since we're ahead of schedule, I wanted to add one thing. We're just slightly ahead of schedule. No. I mean, and I mentioned
he wants to add one thing with three honorable mentions.
No. It's not that. I'd mentioned it to Patrick, and Patrick was aware of this. And I want to say it.
Oh, yeah.
I want to say it to Rick because it shows that even hardcore nerds like me can have bandwagon moments. That I did not, when looking, you know, posting stuff on the Bandwagon Nerds Twitter site, going through things, there was something that Robert Kirkman had done a announcement as to what he thought in his mind, what started the zombie apocalypse in The Walking Dead. And while reading through that, it came to my knowledge that the Walking Dead comic ended in July of 2019. And I'm like, wait, what? And I'm on issue 190. And they ended it at 193. So I shielded myself away from spoilers because I just thought, well, they're on the way to 200. 200 is going to be a really big, like with 100 where Negan shows up, Glenn gets killed and that whole thing, which was a huge moment in the series. So I had no idea that Kirkman just flat out ended this thing at 193, killing off the main character at 192. So I'm like, well, shit, now that I know this, I got three issues to kind of prepare myself emotionally prepare myself for this. I mean, I haven't watched the show that much since season 7 when they killed the tiger. My wife checked out. You know, she just didn't want to deal with it anymore. But
that was what did her in.
That was what did her in.
Wow.
Hey, can I breaking news? I don't know if anybody if this is real or not, but I'm seeing this on legit sources. Kobe Bryant died in a helicopter accident today.
Get out of town.
I'm seeing it on TMZ, and I know TMZ is a lot of people are iffy on that, but I'm seeing it on other news sites. I don't know if it's true or not. A lot of people are saying fake, but I know TMZ has become very cautious when announcing deaths.
Right.
Over the last 10 years, they've got it together, but I'm starting to see this everywhere. So if it's fake news, I apologize, but if it's real, I just want to.
I'm looking.
Yeah,
it up.
I'm seeing the TMZ post.
So I'm waiting. I'm waiting for more sources.
We'll see if that happens. Yeah, we'll see as that develops. If more comes out, I mean that'll definitely pop up on every. I mean that'll be the news cycle if that's legit. So
holy crap.
We'll wait and see. I saw it on a couple of retweets. I follow a lot of sports sites on my personal Twitter. So I saw it on a couple of folks sharing the TMZ article. So we'll have to see from there. So there's no good way to segue back to
correct. And I apologize.
Walking Dead.
Yes.
But, no, the thing that was really interesting about Robert Kirkman, and he said this when he started The Walking Dead, he actually saw it as a much shorter comic book series than it turned out being. And he always wanted to end it on his own terms. And so I think he had finally hit a point where he felt that the story had been told enough. And so he moved on. And so that's really, yeah, I was surprised that you didn't know that, Dave, that caught me off guard, but
yeah.
It happens. Like, I think we all get kind of buried in our own little, like we have our spheres and that's where we go. So, on that note then, unless there's other things we want to add to The Walking Dead, other than it's a terrible TV show and they can't seem to get out of its own way. But it still brings them ratings, so people still watch it. So it'll continue on AMC. We're going to take a little break. We're going to pay the bills. Turn it over, try to get you to listen to some other podcasts, and maybe buy a t-shirt.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis. with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
This is your boy Kenny Killer telling you to make sure you check out TheChairShot.com. Bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, TheChairShot.com.
Okay, and we are back. Gentlemen, Dave mentioned it. We're a little ahead of schedule. That was not an accident. Trying to keep us moving smoothly. I think we did a pretty good job. I don't think that we rushed anything. I think we just went with less news today.
Yeah, and also Rick's breaking news is throwing everybody off. But yeah, I've seen it in multiple outlets as well, Rick.
Yeah, everybody's pausing. I'm about to open up the ESPN app as well. We are going to continue to move forward, though, because by the time this show airs, this news one way or other will be old. So going into today, we're continuing the 80s project. We have so far covered the genres of science fiction and fantasy. And today, I was excited about this one because I figured Rick had seen a lot of these shows. And that is that we're going to cover action and adventure movies of the 80s. This was tough. So tough for me that I refused to do an honorable mention list. And that's why on the rundown that I sent all of you, it still has my fantasy movie honorable mention list. Because as with a lot of these categories, I think that we're looking at another one where there's just so much good stuff. So many great movies out there. And it was hard to narrow it down to 10, and I could speak for hours on the ones that didn't make the list. So, gentlemen, before we jump into this, initial thoughts on our top 10 80s sci-fi, or no, I'm sorry, action flicks, action adventure flicks, which I think is a very important distinction before we go into honorable mentions.
What's that now? That cut out a little bit.
Thoughts about 80s action adventure flicks, sort of an overarching thing. Like,
there's so many of them. I mean, and so many good ones. I mean, some of them are, most of them, I would say, are over the top with some of the stuff and gave unrealistic expectations of what a human person could achieve on their own. Rambo, I'm looking at you, that sort of thing. But I mean, they were so well done, and they just got you all charged up. And that sort of thing. So, I mean, yeah, I love 80s action adventure movies. There's so many great ones. It's hard to really, it's like you said, Patrick, hard to really narrow them down.
Rick, what about you? How did you feel developing this list? Don't talk about your choices, but like this had to be the easier process for you, right? Like this had to be
not one really of- because comedy, action, and adventure are my two. I guess two hunters. So I love the 80s. So it was, I actually took some time on this one. It wasn't like, oh, I've seen 10. I got to put 10 together. Great. Now let me categorize them. It was okay. I have about 30. Now I need to break them down.
Right.
What I like. Now, when we do comedies, I think we probably need to up that list to top 15 because it's going to be almost impossible.
No, there are rules. This show is long enough. These 80s project shows have been long enough to add five more movies to the mix and have Dave talk for 7 hours about cinematography in some random 80s comedy is just not, that's not going to put butts in the seats. It's not going to put ears to the computer. So,
well, then we have to at least give some honorable mentions for comedy.
Absolutely. 100%.
Okay, good deal.
Today I'm going to try to keep everybody having an opportunity to be at a different place in the rotation. Rick has not gone first. So as everybody knows, for the 80s project, we're going to do our top 10s. The rotation will be today. It'll be Rick, Dave, and then me going last. And then rotisserie style means that it'll switch to Patrick, Dave, and Rick for the back end. And we'll do that all the way down to number one. But before we do that, let's jump into some honorable mentions. Like I said, I did not put any honorable mentions in. Because there's too many movies for me to list honorable mentions. And they would have gotten lost in a long conversation shuffle. So I will hand it over to Dave since Rick is going first in the rundown and Dave talks more. Dave, go over your honorable mentions, my friend.
There's like a few of them I want to mention.
A few.
But I'm not going to extrapolate because a lot of them are self-explanatory. I got Rocky III as an honorable mention. And that's only because I've got another one higher up in my actual list. I've got Commando as an honorable mention.
Oh, you guys stop talking about Commando.
Yeah, I know that's higher up. Romancing the Stone is an honorable mention, although that was way high up in Tunney's list, which I don't blame him for that. And I got Iron Eagle, which is a ripoff of a
Iron Eagle, Louis Gossett Jr., yes, man.
And it's a ripoff of a movie that's going to be way high up on all of our lists, probably. But yeah, Queen, your favorite band, had that iconic song in that movie. That was a fun movie. I really liked that one. But those are just kind of the four that jumped out, just kind of putting the list together.
Nice. Rick, what about you?
I had honorable mentions, but I didn't type them down. So
Rick has no honorable mentions. That's
I have, but I'd rather
if you
just
didn't write them down, they didn't exist. And right. Rick, look at Rick. He's like, he's chomping at the bit. I've never seen you this excited for the list, man.
Because I think I got some stuff on here that
you got some meat on the bone.
That'll throw y'all off. So,
excellent. So, just a quick reminder: if you announce something on the list and it's higher up on other people's lists, we're going to hold off on covering it until we get to where they are on the list. And I'm sure that there's going to be plenty of overlap because there has been for most of this show. So with that said, let us flip it over. Rick, give us your number 10.
My number 10 is a Dave's honorable mention. That's Rocky III.
Nice. Go ahead. I don't have it.
I love the Rocky franchises, man. I could just sit here. If someone said you're on an island for the rest of your life and all you have are 4 Rocky movies, I said I'm going to be just fine for the rest of my life. I love everything about them. Rocky 3 is my number 10.
Has one of the worst lines in all of filmdom. Into that fight, if I can change and you can change.
No, that's Rocky 4.
Rocky 3. That's Rocky 4.
And I have that one later down on my list.
Clover Lang. You're right. That's the Clover Lang one. Clover Lang. Never mind. That's
the quote I like.
That's the Eye of the Tiger one.
You want a real man? Come over to my apartment.
My bad.
I'll show you
my bad. Forgive me for confusing my Rockies.
Way to go, man.
So Rocky 3 is my number 10.
Rocky 3 is your number 10. So for me, my number 10, and I'm assuming this is higher up on the list, is an adventure flick involving children. Steven Spielberg's classic, The Goonies. Is that anywhere else on anybody? No, really? Oh, one, shame on the two of you for not having The Goonies on your list. And I will accept no excuses. As a child, you know, we talked about this a lot, about movies we wore out watching over and over and over again. The Goonies, just a fun bunch of misfit kids searching for some pirate treasure. Children in Peril, goofy, crazy booby traps. You know, so some of the stereotyping doesn't age well. I'm looking at you, Data, little Asian kid who loves 007. Would later be Short Round in, or was probably Short Round first, actually, if I'm not mistaken.
Temple of Doom, yeah.
Sean Astin, very young Sean Astin, very young Josh Brolin, Thanos himself, as a teenager. Oh, so many great things about that movie. And I always love the extended cut where they actually show the scene of them fighting the octopus, because they randomly at some point, Spielberg was like, you know, it'd be great. Let's just have a giant octopus in the middle of this little adventure tale. Great stuff. Finding One Eye Willie's treasure. That was my number 10. Dave, what was your number 10?
I'm guessing this might be higher up on Rick's list. Looking at your rundown, unless you switched it on me, Patrick, it's not on your list. But it's Lethal Weapon.
No, Lethal Weapon is not on my list.
Is that on
No, but it was an honorable mention. So I guess I did have an honorable.
No, it wasn't an honorable mention because you didn't do honorable mentions.
Well, shit. It was on there.
Well, though. Shit.
Such good shit. Look, so I mean, Lethal Weapon was just a awesome movie. Danny Glover, I mean, a lot of people didn't even know who Danny Glover really was. Yeah, until Murtaugh shows up in there, and then you got Martin Riggs, Mel Gibson portraying this crazy, slightly unhinged, but in an odd sort of way, sympathetic character that you actually cared about Riggs and this whole thing. It's got everything going on. I'm not sure. Is this the one? Well, I don't know if this is when. I think that's a later one where Murtaugh's, there's a bomb to the toilet. That's probably the second one.
That's the sequel. That's the second one. Yeah.
But this one just had it all. I mean, you know, him, that iconic scene where he's just running down the middle of the freeway, no shoes, shirt open, AK-47 or whatever he's got. The fight with Gary Busey at the end was a good. And it's just a good buddy story. These two seemingly at polar opposite guys kind of coming together and forming this, this brotherhood. So, yeah, I got Lethal Weapon at number 10.
All right. Well, you get to do your number 9 too. You get to bounce right into it.
My number,
rotisserie style, big guy.
My number 9, I know, is not on Patrick's list. I don't even know if Rick's even heard of this movie, but it was, when I was growing up, one of my faves, and that's Lone Wolf McQuaid with Chuck Norris, David Carradine. The Chuck Norris is the Texas Ranger. I mean, this is when I started first learning about Jeeps having the potential to have like turbo power, nitrous oxide, and the movie's so good because you just kind of get to the point where you want to see these two guys square off in this fight at the end of this whole thing. And it's Chuck Norris and it's Carradine, and they go one-on-one. And of course, Chuck Norris is going to win this thing. You know, that sort of thing. I'm not a huge fan on Chuck Norris movies, but this is my favorite of all of them. He was just a good stuff. Barbara Carrere is in this thing, and she's who she is, that sort of thing. She's fun to look at, that sort of thing. He's got a Lone Wolf McQuaid's got a pet wolf. It's just got it all. It's got it all. So I love this movie. It gets number 9 on my list.
You know, you got to love those canon films. Chuck Norris was a guy who worked for, did so many movies for canon films. And when you want to see the legend of Chuck Norris, by the way, just stunned that you're going with that instead of like Missing in Action. Terrific Chuck Norris film.
Dude, I really love Lone Wolf McQuaid better than Missing in Action. But like we've always said, this is our list. So
it is your list. It's a bad list without Missing in Action if you're going to do a Chuck Norris flick. But, you know, that's fine. For me, my number 9, and again, I haven't seen either of your lists, so I don't know if it's on there, is Tango and Cash with Kurt Russell and Sylvester. Thumbs down.
No, it's not on my list.
Thumbs down.
It's not on mine, but it was on my extended honorable mention list.
It was on my director's cut honorable mention. When I threw away in the trash.
Let's talk buddy cop movies for a minute. We talked about Lethal Weapon. This is everything that a good buddy cop movie is. The Odd Couple. You've got Sylvester Stallone in glasses. Which I just, for no other reason than after seeing Rambo, it'd be him being like the straight-laced cop with the spectacles and shit, like, just cracks me up. He and Kurt Russell play very, very well off each other. Kurt Russell in the 80s, man, just crazy awesome in so many different ways. And it's fascinating to see kind of the ebb and flow of who becomes big-time stars and action stars. And you know, the little Disney kid being a big-time action star in the 80s and horror star in the 80s, I love it. And, you know, it's a fun movie. A couple of cops going after a drug kingpin who's kind of set him up. It's a cookie-cutter little plot line. Not too much plot to get in the way in that film, but a lot of fun. All about the interplay between those two.
You know, Patrick, what we need to do is, when the 80s project is over, we need to go back, tabulate how many times people appeared and award an overall
we should,
actor
yeah.
of the 80s.
Save those lists.
Yeah, exactly.
Or at least the bandwagon nerds actors of the 80s.
True.
All right, Rick, what's your number 9, my friend?
Rambo, First Blood.
It's higher on mine.
Okay.
All right, so you're number 8 then.
My 8?
Yeah.
Die Hard.
Higher on mine.
Higher on mine, too.
Do I get my number 7?
No. Nope.
Oh, okay.
Because we're going to talk about another Kurt Russell movie, Escape from New York. Not on anybody's list?
Nope.
See, now this, the thing about Escape from New York, by the way, John Carpenter, 1981, another one of those classic, it could have been a sci-fi movie. Could have been an action adventure movie because it takes place in the future. Though the best part about this is in 1981, when this movie takes place, 1997 is the future.
Yeah, exactly.
And so when you think about that, it's great. And this is all about a United States president crashing into Manhattan, which in the future has become a giant maximum security prison. And Snake Plissken, played by Kurt Russell, is a convicted bank robber who has to go and try and save the president. Just an over the top view of the future. John Carpenter did this a lot in a lot of different movies, whether it be this, Death Race, stuff like that. And it's hilarious to see now, especially what they thought. Now, anytime we look at like movies that say they take place in the future, 1981 and their view of 1997, which is a very gritty, you know, sort of stripped down future, kind of that post, you know, more of a dystopian future than you know, kind of a advanced society sort of thing. Great film, a lot of action. Again, not a lot of plot to get in the way. Less ridiculous than the follow-up Escape from L.A. Watch Escape from New York. Do not watch Escape from L.A. Dave.
My number eight is the only appearance on my list of the one and only Jean-Claude Van Damme, and that is Bloodsport.
Ooh. Good. Yeah.
Close, but I don't have that one.
Yeah.
I got another one.
This movie, it's loosely based on the real life story of Frank Dukes and the Kumite, a mixed martial before MMA was a thing. But before UFC was a thing, this is as close as you were going to get. But these guys were fighting for keeps, not paychecks and that sort of thing. And it's a great story, just kind of like, you know, Frank Dukes being the first white guy to go over to wherever this was going on and win this tournament and everything he went through and his friendship with, who was it? Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds. Is that who? That's right. And he gets his ass kicked pretty well by, I forget the guy's name. Who was the antagonist in several Jean-Claude Van, always got his ass kicked by Jean-Claude Van Damme. And,
right.
But it's just a great movie. It's got nothing but action. It teaches you a lot about this tournament, which is a real thing. The Kumite is a real thing. You look up Frank Dukes and there's a lot of stuff on him and the whole kind of ninjutsu, you know, American ninjutsu. I mean, he even started his own academy. So based in fact, just a great movie. My only Jean-Claude Van Damme appearance on the list.
All right. Yeah. I almost made my list too. Very, very dramatic. They're so like when the kickboxing and the underground fighting craze started to hit late 80s.
Yeah.
Those movies were like a dime a dozen. And Jean-Claude Van Damme really started making his hay in that. That was back, you know, when he still kind of had the baby face about him before he got really haggard looking. So good stuff. Good stuff. That's your number eight. What's your number seven?
My number seven, I suspect, is higher on Rick's list, but it might be at the same spot. And that is Rocky IV.
It's higher.
Okay. It's higher on Rick's list. So I yield.
I'm ashamed of the two of you for having Rocky IV on your list and having it that
wait
movie,
till you find out where I have it, Patrick. You're really
I can't wait to eviscerate the two of your list over Rocky IV. So that puts us at my number seven. My number seven is Commando starring Arnold Schwarzenegger. Anybody got it on there?
It was my honorable mention, but
you talked about ridiculous movies when it comes to action. Arnold Schwarzenegger as a one-man army eviscerating off-the-grid Colombian, you know, I can't even remember what he's like a general or something trying to attempt a coup. He destroys an entire military outpost with nothing more than like a machine gun and a rocket launcher. Goes through like everybody does, like the classic, like standing in front of a row of guys with the machine gun and mows them all down. Has some of my favorite terrible Arnold Schwarzenegger one-liners. though my favorite of all time is there is a moment where the whole story is that his daughter gets kidnapped, played by a very young Alyssa Milano, and he has to go rescue her. And the two guys that drop him off on a plane to go to do some dirty task in order to free his daughter, there's a guy named Sully. And he's like, Sully, I like you. That's why I'm going to kill you last. Fast forward to the movie a little bit as he's trying to make his way to this base. He has got Sully by the leg over a cliff. And he's just like, hey, Sully, remember that time when I told you I'd kill you last? And Sully's like, that's right, you did. He's like, I lied. And he just drops him. Great stuff. He eats green berets for breakfast. Such good stuff. He let Sully go.
Matrix.
Ray Don Chong. Yeah, his name was Matrix. Ray Don Chong being like, hey, what happened to Sully? I let him go. It was good stuff. Great stuff. It's a beautiful number seven for me.
Yeah, it's got so many good one-liners. The whole,
he throws the pipe through the dude into the steam, let off some steam, Bennett.
Yeah, or like the part where he kills the guy who's with him on the plane and he tells the stewardess, please don't wake my friend. He's dead tired. You know, that sort of thing. Ugh,
good stuff. Good stuff. Rick.
What number? Seven?
Seven. Way to follow along. Stop following. Stop trying to look up stuff about Kobe Bryant.
Raiders of the Lost Ark. I'm sure it's higher.
Stop. Get off there.
Just stop.
What's your number six?
My number six, Full Metal Jacket.
Ooh, good one, Rick.
Wow, interesting.
Thank you. Thank you, little fucking maggot. Sorry.
You know, it's interesting because it's
me so horny.
Me so horny. Me love you long time.
That movie fascinates me, though, because it really is the tale of two different movies. Like, it's a very distinct, like, you've got the basic training, like, mindfuck, and then you've got the Vietnam stuff, and you're just like, the feel is completely different. And for a lot of people, when Vincent D'Onofrio leaves that movie, people lose interest. So it's fascinating how that was put together.
Right. When they go to Vietnam, about 10 minutes after the me so horny part, that's when I start, okay, I got to get up and do some stuff. Then I'll restart the movie.
But right.
That for the first 3/4 of the movie, when it's on, I'm watching it. I'm not getting up. I love it. Great acting. I love the movie, man. It's a good movie.
And one of the best lines in there. I mean, it's brutal, but it's funny at the same time where they're flying the helicopter, you know, not talking about helicopters with what happened to Kobe, but, right. You know, where they're flying in the helicopter over the rice fields and the guy's just shooting up everything. Yeah. And the photographer's like, how do you shoot innocent women and children? He's like, easy. You don't lead them as much. It's just like, damn. But what a line.
Yep. Yep. Great movie.
So that brings me to my number 6.
Or is it my number 6? It's mine, right? You go twice. Or no, it's yours, Patrick.
Never mind. I'm in the middle. I'm in the middle.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Or no, you're right. You're right. It's you. You're the middle. I'm the end.
Okay.
We got messed up there.
Yeah, it's me, Dave, then Patrick.
Okay. Well, my
somehow we rotisserie Dave.
Spitfire me, baby. So number 6 is Rambo First Blood Part 2, which I'm guessing might be higher on Rick's list.
Who?
Rambo, First Blood Part 2.
No, that was lower on mine.
Ah,
y'all told me to shut up.
Okay. I know it's not on Patrick's list, which has got problems in itself that it didn't make your list, Patrick, but
I don't like any of the Rambo movies.
None?
I'll throw it out there. I've never cared for the Rambo movies.
It's
not my thing, man.
This movie, even more so than Commando, was all about the one man wrecking force. Arnold Schwarzenegger just not only defeats a militia of people, he just defeats an entire country, basically. You know, we lost the Vietnam War. Well, one guy's going to reverse all that. So I'm going to take out the Viet Cong and I'm going to take out the Russians all at the same damn time. Yeah, it's got it's over the top, but you just find yourself. I mean, I think it's this high on my list just because, more so than any other movie on this list, it was the one man wrecking crew that one guy can just destroy everything. And
with a bow and arrow that explodes.
And I mean, and to think about it, for Stallone to, at a time when Rocky was as hot as it was, to actually create, because if you watch First Blood, the first one, this Rambo in Rambo 2 or First Blood Part 2 is quite different than
different movies
than John Rambo in First Blood, you know, and you did. It's like, I didn't see that coming, where he would just, I mean, you got to see what a badass he was in the first one. But this took it and just like, well, let me inject that with some Bane level of steroids and turn him loose on this country. It's over the top. It's crazy, but damn, it's good. And I just find myself cheering for Rambo by the time it's all over. So it gets number 6 on my list.
All right, now we're to me and my number 6. I'm suspecting it might be higher up for you guys. I'm not sure, but Top Gun.
Yep, it's higher.
That higher. Was my all right. Mention.
Honorable mention to Top
yes,
Gun.
Dude, what? Patrick, I am going to rock you with my top 5, brother. You have no idea.
Yeah, Rocky's in your top 5, it sounds like.
Well, you know two right. of my top 5, so I mean.
So, all right, I'm going to move on to my number 5 then. We're halfway through the list. This was actually mentioned by Dave and Rick, I think, in the sci-fi podcast, and that's Aliens. Space Marines. We talked about this show a lot. Our movie a lot when we did the sci-fi list. Space Marines, man. That's all I'm going to say, because what more can be said that we didn't say 2 weeks ago?
Right.
Space Marines.
That's true.
That's my Dave. You're number 5, bro.
I know damn well this is higher up on Rick's list for sure, and that's Batman 1989. So let's just move along to is my number 4?
It's my number five.
Your number 5. Go ahead, Rick.
Say goodnight to the bad guy. I got Scarface is my number 5.
Yeah.
Gangster movie.
Yeah.
The world is yours. Cocaine. Shooting people in the face on the street. Al Pacino. One of his best movies. Scarface.
That's a good call, Rick. I didn't think. For some reason, I didn't think about that.
Well, okay.
It's one of those that you can. I didn't necessarily think of as an action film, even though it's got action. You know what I mean? Like, I would almost be like drama. like almost in a weird way. Like it's I always say that with like The Godfather and stuff like that too. A lot of mob movies are built on the story and the drama. And that's really, you know, what I think is interesting about Scarface is it's really about his rise to power and inevitable fall.
Yep.
Violence just happens to be a big part of it.
Yep.
So that's your number five. What's your number four?
My number four is very close to Bloodsport, but a movie that I can watch anytime, anywhere, any setting. Jean-Claude Van Damme, 1 year later, Kickboxer. I fucking love Kickboxer. Man, just coming at getting revenge for paralyzing his brother, training up and wherever he was, and just getting ready to what's his name? I can't think of the villain's name.
Christ, I don't know. I haven't watched. I did clearly.
They called him Nung Su Cao, White Warrior. So he was the White Warrior, and I can't remember. But a kickboxer, a very good karate movie, and very similar to Bloodsport. But
it's technically a sequel to Bloodsport, I think, even though it's definitely it's a definite different character. And the fight at the end where they wrap the they tape their hands, dip them in the glue
glass,
and then have glass, and then they start cutting each other up, and he's got to throw the fight until they rescue his brother. And I mean, there's a series of those Jean-Claude, like Lionheart was another pretty good one. Double Impact, you know, where there's the two Jean-Claude Van Damme. So there's a bunch of them like that. Good call, Rick.
Thank you.
It's a call, all right. Number four. I am really trolling you guys pretty hard on your list. Now, I'm sorry. I know these are your lists. I should be better. It's because I've been drinking. You know, I got the scotch.
I like drinking, Patrick.
I'm all liquored up for the Royal Rumble, baby. So my number
Patrick for the Greg DeMarco show. That's the one
I need to see. That drinking Patrick got in too much trouble when he was drinking Patrick on the Greg DeMarco show. And it was a lot easier to do it when we were recording on weekends. Anyway, my number four, I know it already got mentioned earlier. I'm not sure if it's higher than four on anybody else's list, but that's Die Hard. David, did you put Die Hard higher up?
It is identical. This is the part of the list where you and I have shockingly some identical choices. Right. Die Hard's number four.
I did make a flip. I told that in the chat, but yes, but Die Hard number four
for me too.
All right, let's just get it out of the way now, fellas. Christmas movie or no?
Yes.
Absolutely.
No. No.
Yeah, it was at a Christmas party.
It's an action movie that happens during the Christmas season.
The director said it's a Christmas movie, so it don't matter what anyone else thinks. It's what the director and the producer think.
Sure, if that's what you want to say. And I look for the beautiful holiday message and the spirit of Christmas being passed down through John McClane saying, now I've got a machine gun. It's a great action movie. Bruce Willis is terrific in that. Spawned plenty of sequels. I love the Samuel L. Jackson sequel, Jesus, and all that versus Hey Zeus, Father Apollo and all that shit. But the original Die Hard, really great. Alan Rickman, amazing. Really introduced the world to him as an actor. Talk about a guy who got a late boost on a career. Him, like Morgan Freeman, those folks. It's just great. Terrific, terrific movie.
Yeah, I think, wait, you're saying that Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, isn't a good Christmas slogan?
Doesn't strike me as a holiday greeting, no.
I'm going to get one of those to put on the outside of my door. Hey, instead of welcome.
The Washington Post just announced that Kobe died, so it must be as official.
Yeah, ESPN's reporting it. LAPD is apparently about to confirm it.
That's terrible.
So, it is.
Shocking, to say the least. Getting back to Die Hard, though, it is an action movie that happens at Christmas, but aside from that, just the whole Nakatomi Plaza, you know, another one man wrecking crew that destroys the plans of this terrorist organization. There's so many iconic moments, and just running around barefoot doing crazy shit, like wedging a machine gun into a elevator shaft so that he can escape. And it's a great movie. I mean, I thought really hard about having it even higher, but fantastic
stuff. Can I make a confession about this movie?
Sure.
I saw it for the first time a couple years ago.
Shut up, man! Every time I think you can't stoop lower on this show, you got a parade to
attend. Oh my gosh!
Or you haven't seen another classic. Like, how did your parents just not let you watch movies?
It was my number three in wrestling, and my number one.
Yeah, okay.
I just want to just skip my number three because I don't want to see Patrick's.
We're doing the number three. We're doing it. And it's, it is it to you? Is it to you?
Is
it,
it is number? Because y'all had the same number four. So it is mine.
So number three.
Conan the Destroyer.
Oh, fuck.
Hey.
Oh.
Wrestling man. The big fucking monkey guy in the mirror room. And oh man. My God, dude. I have a VHS tape that my mom filmed of me doing the exact move by move in the living room as a child with the sword. I was Conan for Halloween for years, like I was Masters of the Universe. Soak it in, man. Conan the Destroyer, number three.
How can you like that terrible movie over the original? That's really my problem here, is the original is the superior film.
I disagree.
You're wrong. Oh, wow. Oh,
but I do like the original. But for me, the glass scene where he had to break the glass as a kid sucked me in. That one scene sucked me into to like that movie a lot more.
Ugh. Right? It just...
Wait till you hear my number two.
Well, you know what I think is interesting is that it's now back to Dave's number three.
My number three, I know, Patrick, I think you indicated you might have flip-flopped, but I'm not sure where this shows up. It's Superman 2.
Yeah, I flipped it. So it's my it's a little bit higher up on the list. Okay. Get the hell out of here. You just endorsed Conan the Destroyer. You get no say for the rest of this podcast, sir. My number three is Rick's number one. So we will, of course, skip it because that's Batman, the 1989 Tim Burton classic. And we will jump right into my number two. My number two was Superman 2. What's really interesting about this is that Superman 2 and the original Superman, the Richard Donner movies, were filmed at the same time. But were released separately as there was a huge falling out between Richard Donner and the studio. And only recently, it's funny, as much as I bemoaned the Zack Snyder cut.
I was about to say that.
they released a Richard Donner cut. And I checked it out. Like I didn't, I ended up buying the Richard Donner cut of Superman 2 when Blockbuster went out of business. And they were unloading their inventory.
Trying to get rid of everything, yeah.
Right. So I bought it for like a dollar. Nice. So I have Superman 2. The Donner cut stowed away in the old collection there just by happenstance, but it gets no better than Neil Before Zod. Like Zod, I'm going to forget the guy's name who played him. Great character actor. I'm going to have to look him up while Dave talks about Superman 2. Just, you know, the wrestling with the responsibility, wanting to have the powers go away, sacrificing that for Lois Lane, forget the goofy like comic book science to make her forget things. Love that movie. Superman 2 is my favorite Superman movie of any sort, and I think many people would agree with me. Just great stuff.
That was the original in the 70s?
78, I think.
78, but the Superman 2 came out in 81, though.
Right. Like Patrick said, they were filmed at the same time. It is one of the rare circumstances where the sequel exceeds the original, and that's saying a lot because the first Superman was fantastic. This one just took that and accelerated. I mean, they get the tie-in from the three of them getting released from the Phantom Zone, and then everything that Superman goes through. He wants to have a normal life. He wants to share his life with Lois, but he's got to give up his powers. And then you're like thinking, once he does, and he gets his ass kicked in that truck stop by that asshole Rocky. A different Rocky, right. Not Rocky Balboa.
Right,
You're just like, I mean, I remember watching this. How's he going to get his powers back? And it's all tied into one single crystal that brings it all home. And then he outsmarts.
Terrence Stamp, by the way. Terrence Stamp is Zod.
And he outsmarts them, and he outsmarts Lex Luthor. And Gene Hackman's fantastic in this movie. Right. Weasley little shit that he is that just tries to get out of everything. And it's, I think that's where Man of Steel tried to replicate this movie and failed in a pretty big way when matched up against Superman 2. But yeah, it's I've always preferred Superman over Batman, and that's just my personal bias coming through. But they're the two iconic DC superhero movies of the 80s are those two, and I got Superman 2 at number three.
All right, so.
But you added it too, Patrick. I recognize.
I added it too. That means we're rolling over to, I think it's to you for your number two.
My number two, Rick talked about it, I think, in his honorable mentions, which is mind-numbing. But it's Top Gun.
And I had it as number six in my list.
Right.
Hey, isn't that the one where the sequel's coming out here next
year?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And I want to see that sequel. Like,
absolutely.
For sure. You want to talk about a trailer that got my blood pumping. The second you see him,
nice.
When you see him going on that motorcycle along the sunrise or the sunset or whatever, every time.
Let's be honest now. There are probably two movies that you could legitimately classify as dude flicks. Chicks have chick flicks everywhere. But I think you can say Top Gun and Point Break are the two that that guys most associate with, for good reason. I mean, Top Gun's got the iconic moment, the you've lost that loving feeling in a bar, which we've tried before. I've tried that myself, and it actually does have some success rate. But, you know, you got that. You got the dog fighting. You got Val Kilmer, who's Iceman. Talk to me, Goose. I mean, when Goose dies, it's just man.
Rip your heart out.
It does. It does. And Meg Ryan is understated in that movie. I mean, Kelly McGillis. Yeah. I mean, they got one of the all time great sex scenes that has nothing to do with porn from that movie.
Seriously. First, and I will say that first like, scene where like, little O'Dowd was like, oh, hey, like this little, like when this O'Dowd was a little, that was like that. I find this very interesting. What is happening here? what is this all about? Why do I feel funny down low?
I'm going to hit the brakes. He'll fly right by.
Yeah. Kelly McGillis. Delightful lesbian that she is.
Have y'all seen her now?
Yes. She is super lesbian.
She's super. Doesn't even look like herself.
Exactly.
Which is why she wasn't invited for the sequel.
Yeah.
All right. So here's a quick question. Better, and I'm going to go outside of the genre, better 80s soundtrack. Is it, and I'm going to give you three choices. This might be a poll question someday too. Better 80s soundtrack, Top Gun. And I know you guys are going to vote against it. Top Gun, Footloose, or Dirty Dancing.
Dirty Dancing.
Really?
I would eliminate Dirty Dancing. I would exclude Dirty Dancing completely. Footloose and Top Gun's tougher. Both headed by Kenny Loggins songs, right?
Yeah.
Well,
the one for Top Gun has two lines in it, and that's it. So
what?
No,
90% of the song is two words, so it's not much song.
Right? But it's not just Danger Zone. You got Danger Zone, you got Take My Breath Away. Oh god, what are they playing during the volleyball scene?
I forgot about that. Okay, Top Gun. I'm changing my mind.
But I don't know, because Footloose has got some great stuff too.
Got, like, you've lost that loving feeling is in that movie as well. Footloose has got a bunch too.
That might, let's hear it for my boy, all that stuff. Anyway.
Poll question tomorrow coming, folks.
Right. No, that's not the poll question tomorrow. Tomorrow will be Monday, so. Could be poll question today. I don't know. We put one up on the podcast.
We haven't yet.
There's some possibilities. Who's number two are we on? We on my number two, which we already did because that was Superman 2.
Did we get to Rick's number two?
No, yeah, because yours was Top Gun, so it's now my number two.
Right.
I'm scared.
And my number two
is scared.
Patrick, if you keep drinking, if you die, you die.
Fuck you, man.
Rocky IV, baby. The best Rocky of all time. If you think different, then suck it.
Yeah, I will suck this guy. That's what I'm going to do.
No easy way out there, Patrick. Keep on drinking so I can drive my Ferrari down the street, jam into some 80s music, thinking about our memories and what I could have done to stop you from drinking.
Patrick's just, slamming the scotch down to deal with this shit. I didn't have...
That movie is terrible, man. That movie is so bad.
Look, here's why I've got it. Not as high as Rick does, but why I put it ahead of Rocky 3. And this is because of my own personal experience, because I saw
it single-handedly ended the Cold War. I mean, I don't understand.
I saw it in the theater, in the movies, in, what was it, 1988, right, Rick? I
think 88 or 89, one of the two.
It's one of the only times that I've ever been in a movie theater for a movie. And when Rocky hits Drago and cuts him, that whole theater jumped up and started cheering. I've never had a reaction like that to a movie. And that is the power of that movie. Yeah, it's got some stupid shit. Apollo Creed dying was a major, major downer. But it does have an iconic, I mean, Rocky overcoming the tyranny of Soviet, the cheating bastards with all the steroids and all this shit. Yeah, I mean, I don't have it as high as Rick, but.
So, okay, you've had your moment to pontificate about how good this movie was. Let me lay this out very simply. The only good thing that Rocky IV ever gave us was a gif. Throw the damn towel. That's the only gift that we can say that Rocky IV gave us. I'm sorry. Training in Siberia in a fucking cabin, like running around with logs on his back and shit.
It's called manual labor, and it works.
Old school. Old school.
Hard work.
Hearts
on fire. Hearts on fire. Burn desire.
Evil Soviet technology. Like, yeah, the roids thing. Of course he was doing steroids. Because let's just say that Rocky had a natural fucking body in that movie.
Yeah.
It was the mountains.
Right, it was the mountains. Anyway, that movie's garbage. I'm sorry. It's terrible.
I don't
Rocky
know.
Two,
although
Rocky
I will say,
three,
I don't.
Rocky one, all superior films.
I don't know too many guys who get steroid shots in their shoulder. I'm just saying. You know,
right,
I'm just saying.
I go in the rear. I go in the hip butt area.
Is that where you do it, Rick?
No, really.
I know.
In the butt. All right, let's get this out of the way. It's Rick's turn to lay on. It's Rick's turn to lay number one on us. Let's get it done.
Do you ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? Because
nope,
I
you sure did.
Batman, 1989, my all-time favorite movie ever created, ever. I wore two VHSs out growing up. Broke them, played them over and over and over. I got a Batman tattoo. Half my shit in my game room is Batman. I love Batman. It's all because of this movie. And as much as I love Christian Bale, I still have to go with Michael Keaton as the best Batman ever. Just to me, growing up, this movie had so much influence on anything.
Rick, yeah. Do you like Batman?
No, man, I'm a Superman guy.
Yeah, right.
Who was the guy responsible for Superman's death? Dave?
Darkseid?
Doomsday?
Doomsday?
Yeah, I think it was Doomsday was responsible for his death.
Did Doomsday kill him?
Yeah, Doomsday killed him. I don't know about Batman killing. We already talked about this on Twitter. It's all out there for everybody to see. Batman could have killed him, but yeah, but Martha got in the way, that sort of thing.
I will say that the influence of this Batman movie, by the way, can't be stated enough, really. And I mean that generally, because, you know, we went about a decade without a superhero movie of any consequence. And then Batman, Tim Burton came out and took on Batman, and fascinatingly enough, had some of the most interesting casting choices that people questioned until it came to be, a particular, you know, in namely Michael Keaton being cast as Bruce Wayne / Batman, and showed
it caused a lot of backlash at that time.
Oh, absolutely. But when people saw the performance, and really Tim Burton showed that he knew what he wanted in for his vision for that character, and knew that Michael Keaton could be the guy to pull it off. Like, that's just phenomenal. And to see that, you know, transitioned well and was very effective. I can't deny that Batman was a terrific, amazing action. It was in my top three. It was my number three. So, you know, definitely up there for me as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That first Batman movie just set so many things off. I mean, we did that poll on Bandwagon Nerds, one of the more popular ones, as to who was the best Batman. And Keaton barely edged out Christian Bale, but that shows you just how much people think about Michael Keaton as Batman. Jack Nicholson as a Joker. I mean, that's got to be, we got to probably do a poll as to who's the best Joker, because I think Jack Nicholson versus Heath Ledger is going to be a very heated debate as to which one is the better Joker. But, But I mean, Jack Nicholson's portrayal of him was fantastic. You know, all the little lines. I mean, it's a kind of a colorful movie against a very dark backdrop. And that's the Tim Burton sort of
Gothic backdrop.
Yeah.
Was great.
Yeah. And you know, Kim Basinger was excellent in that movie. There's there's so much stuff about that movie. I mean, and I remember in 89, just people not sure whether they could pull off a movie like that. It was controversial at the time, because people were like, you know, how are you going to make a Batman movie? It's 89, so the technology isn't what it was now, but boy, they pulled it off masterfully. It's one of my favorites. I mean, I prefer Christian Bale, but that's just me. But it's a great movie.
Let's be honest, though, the Batmobile, not very practical for turning.
No, not very.
Oh, So that leads us into what I think is a joint number one for Dave and I.
And Tony. Tony as well.
And Tony, PC Tony, who sent us a list. And sorry, Tony, we didn't really touch on your list very much here and there.
Sorry I showed up, Tony.
Well, you know, we had him on standby just in case.
Oh my
He's like
God.
The back. He's the backup Miss America.
You never know when there's a parade somewhere. There could be a parade somewhere.
If at any point
Mardi Gras season is
Rick can't fulfill his bandwagon nerd's duties, the secondary host will step in.
I can't wait for the next time Rick says I can't be there. I got to be in the Pride Parade. So that's going to be fun.
Shenanigans.
Oh, Pride. Sorry.
All right. So number one for me, for Dave, this is definitely much more in the adventure realm, though lots of great action. That's Raiders of the Lost Ark, Harrison Ford, Indiana Jones, everything from the iconic theme song, punching Nazis, religious overtones, melting faces. Oh God, Karen Allen, just awesome. Like just awesome.
Snakes. Why'd it have to be snakes?
It has to be snakes.
I love that. I mean, there's so many. I mean, the iconic, the boulder scene. I mean, did you go?
Oh, yeah.
Did you ride the Indiana Jones ride at Magic Kingdom, Patrick?
No, I didn't have time to.
I mean, that whole boulder scene is a major, major set piece of the Indiana Jones Temple of the Forbidden Eye ride.
I'm sorry. They don't have it in Orlando.
Well, they don't. That's right. It's a Disneyland thing. I'm sorry.
Right.
But yeah, like you said, Patrick, the iconic music. The true sense of adventure that movie gives you, where you really feel like you're on an adventure with Indy, trying to find the lost ark. I mean, it's funny.
Just even the way that they would show travel with the plane, like the map,
yes,
with the little red dot. Just such a great movie.
I mean, that scene where the guy comes out, he shows up. I mean, I remember watching this with my dad, where the guy shows up with the big sword and he's doing all this stuff, and Indiana just reaches in and blows him away. One of the funniest.
All because Harrison Ford was sick.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Like, it's apparently supposed to be this like bigger fight, and he couldn't do it. So, there's not enough good things that you can say about that movie. But that was, you know, we talk about people at their peaks, and when we've talked about the '80s, you know, some of these directors and where they were. This was, you know, that era of Spielberg where he just could do no wrong with a film. Like he could do no wrong. And that spans into the '90s, where he just didn't make mistakes when it came to films, and everything he cranked out seemed to be awesome. And Indiana Jones fits right in there. That finale, when they open the Ark of the Covenant and you know, everything, like the special, you talked about special effects, and you want to talk about how much time has changed. It's so practical. The way that's worked and the way that's gone down. So, for me, it's an easy number one.
Yeah, I didn't really spend a whole lot of time thinking about it. I see Rick's got to cut out of here, but
yes, y'all keep talking. I got to cut out. I got to show the house, and they're about to pull up. So,
all right, Rick. Well, we will talk to you next week. Okay, brother.
All right, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Get Tony in here right now, Patrick, for the last few minutes.
All right, get Tony on the phone.
I agree with you though. I mean, I don't think there were too many options. I mean, Raiders of the Lost Ark spawned two really good sequels, one right. Pretty good sequel. I know Kingdom of the Crystal Skull gets shit on a lot, which I didn't hate it or anything like that, but
because reasons
why I didn't hate it.
I mean, no, yeah, why didn't you hate it? It's a terrible movie.
I thought it was all right. I mean, I didn't like the alien sort of thing to it, but I just seeing them actually do it again was right. Enough to kind of get me interested in it. But yeah, it's not Last Crusade. It's not Temple of Doom. That's for sure.
Right. Absolutely. So one other thing, as you know, we've kind of had this sort of shadow of the news about Kobe Bryant coming in. The other, we were starting to see some other information come through. Apparently Rick Fox was also on that helicopter as well. And so Jesus. It sounds like we lost Rick Fox as well. Just that, you know, I don't know. I mean, stuff's just kind of trickling in here and there. But it definitely seems like that's real. Really makes it hard to kind of focus on a show if sports, you know, athletics are your thing. Like it's, you know, I remember watching Kobe, you know, play when, you know, obviously he was the greatest basketball player for a serious period of time. And regardless of what you feel about the man, and his off the field or off the court stories and issues, because there was a lot that went on with him, obviously off the court. Same thing with any of these guys. To hear news like this is really tragic and it's sad. And I hate that that's how we're going to kind of end the show. Wrap this up. I think that to again do an awkward segue. Good list. I think that I've really loved doing this project, Dave, and I hope you have too. I've had a lot of fun doing these movies.
Yeah.
And I think next week we're going to try to lighten things up. I think we're going to have a lot of fun next week because next week we're going to do comedies of the 80s.
Oh, yes.
And I can tell you that again, the bounty is plentiful of films to choose from. And I can't wait to see really where our tastes lie. And I think that's the other thing that's been kind of fun about this list is you see the overlap, but then you see where each of us really has kind of our own thing. And I think that's been a lot of fun and been a great part of this. And I hope that the people enjoy it.
Rick's thing is a little weird sometimes, but that's all right. It's his thing.
Right. You put Rocky IV, number two. But anyway.
And Conan the Destroyer.
Right. We're gonna get out of here, though, everybody. Dave, tell everybody where to find you on the social media. Tell them how else to listen to you. Where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at AttitudeAgg. That is at AttitudeAgg. And on Facebook, facebook.com/AttitudeOfAggression. Also, make sure you're checking out the Bandwagon Nerds Twitter page at Bandwagon Nerds.
Excellent. I am holding steady at 456 followers.
Hey, at least you didn't lose really any.
Yeah, not really moving the needle, but you can follow me at Wrestling Realist. That is at WrestlingRealist, Wrestling Realist. You can also listen to me every Wednesday on the Greg DeMarco Show, where we talk about pro wrestling with myself, Greg DeMarco, and Miranda Morales. But that'll do it for today. Hope you all have had a good time following us on the 80s project. Come back and see us next week when we cover comedies. Until then, climb yourselves out of the basement, fellow basement dwellers. Get some sun. Enjoy the day.
So long, guys.